If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Hello and welcome to Mainstream by Sifter. My name is Gianni. Thanks for joining us. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, welcome, because on Mainstream, the team behind sifter.com.au discuss their experiences playing a variety of games. So there's big AAA titles, smaller games and indies, retro releases, and anything that's been brought back to life, as it seems to be the trend these days. It's all covered here. My guest on this episode of Mainstream is Edmund Tran, who's the managing editor of Games Hub, one of the best Australian outlets for games and one of my favorites. Thanks for joining me on Mainstream, Ed.
Oh, it's so nice of you, Gianni. Thank you for having me. Stoked to be on Sifter.
We're really excited to hear what you think about this game that we're talking about today, which is going to be out today. If you're listening to us on the day that the episode comes out, we're, of course, talking about the spooky deserted streets of Shibuya in Tango Gameworks' Ghostwire Tokyo, available on PlayStation 5 and PC today. So let's jump right in.
This is Mainstream.
Well, what is Ghostwire Tokyo? So if people don't remember, this game was one that had, I think, probably one of the most charming debuts back in 2019 at an E3. Ikumi Nakamura, who's the former creative director, there's a bit of a story behind that as well, but, you know, introduced this in a game, and it was a game that really stood out in comparison to all of the other games that were launched at that particular Bethesda showcase.
We are making a new kind of action-adventure game. It's spooky, but not the survival horror game that we are known for. People are vanishing in Tokyo. You must find out why. You will encounter conspiracies and the occult. You have to explore the world, face challenges to uncover the truth and save humanity. In the game, you will meet spirits, some dangerous, some peaceful, and survivors that each have their own stories. You will need to ask yourself, is this normal or paranormal? I ask myself this question every time I go to the office.
Ed, how would you describe what Ghostwire Tokyo is?
Look, I think spooky is a really good term for it. You know, this is obviously coming from Tango, who've done, they're led by Shinji Mikami, who created Resident Evil. So he's got some chops in horror. And Evil Within 1 and Evil Within 2 were some pretty gruesome, like hectic horror games. But this one, it's definitely toned down. It's spooky. It's got some horror influences. It's got some sweet monster design. But it's definitely, it's an action game, first and foremost. It's an open world action game set in Shibuya where spirits have invaded the world. And yeah, these spirits are spooky.
It's basically a first-person shooter for people who would be familiar with that. It's a game which I think does some really interesting things, does some things really well, but also leaves you a little bit wanting. And I guess for me, what I really liked about this, just to start off with, is it really gave me a nostalgia for visiting Tokyo. I've been to the places that are in this game and walking down those little streets and finding vending machines hidden behind, you know, little alleys that you wouldn't think that anyone would ever go down. Like, all of that sort of stuff is there. And I think the world itself looks really engaging. If you look at the level design, the world that you're in, it feels like you're in your place. Do you have that same sort of experience?
Yeah, I hate being like the guy who says, oh, I've been to Tokyo like 11 times. I used to go every year. But that's exactly what I used to do for Tokyo Game Show. And like seeing this, like after having not been to Japan for a few years, it's crazy. I think, you know, I enjoy the Yakuza games for the very same reason, in that they recreate a neighborhood in great detail, and the feeling and the atmosphere of the streets, the people, just the little touches, in the world are just so accurate and true to life that it really makes you feel like you're there. This one takes it to a bit more of a detailed level, I thought, because it's a first-person game. You'll be like snooping around. You'll be like sticking your nose like right in, like close up to like menus and signs. And there are like some very thinly veiled sort of imitations of famous stores like Family Mart and so on and so forth. So yeah, the world of this game is just, it's incredibly well done. And, you know, it's a publisher. It's published by Bethesda. They have a shitload of money. A lot of money was thrown into making this world look as gorgeous and true to life as possible. And it's definitely like the star, the highlight of Ghostwire, I'd say.
I'd say the other thing that really I found super enjoyable about this was actually, even just from my own perspective, you know, seeing a lot of the Japanese folklore that was referred to in this game that you see mentioned in other games, and you start to see the pieces where it's kind of coming together. And you know, that's what I really enjoyed, because I'm like, oh, that's very similar to the Tonberry knife that you find in every, you know, all of these sort of things sort of come together, and you can see the layers. There's a collectible you find which looks exactly like a Pokemon, and you can see, oh, that was what they were actually referring to in that particular Pokemon. So for me, that was a really enjoyable experience, learning that sort of bit of lore, a bit of history, things that we'd kind of picked up on before in previous games. And I'm just wondering about sort of that environmental detail. Were there other bits and pieces that you thought worked really nicely in terms of like how they set the scene outside of the world that it's there?
Yeah, I mean, well, the spirits that you mentioned, like the yokai, which is basically the Japanese super, like it's I think it's kind of spiritual, kind of religious, and it's kind of just you know, just their belief system that their mythology that they've created, in that everything in the world has a spirit unique to it. And, you know, if you've played games like Yo-Kai Watch, like they go into that, but they're very specific, very culturally specific games, and you don't see this stuff outside of Japan very often. Though, like concepts like, you know, the Kappa and, you know, things in Pokemon, like certainly do turn up. But I think that aspect definitely brings in the cultural specificity, definitely makes this game, gives it such a vibrant personality and really makes it so endearing. Like, I really wanted to like this game a lot more than I did, because the world building, the spiritual nature of it, and the character designs were all so top notch. Yes. So yes, that aspect is definitely one of my favorites too.
I think you've really touched on it there. You wanted to like it a lot more than you did. Can you tell me a little bit about where, I guess, some of the points where you think this game may not have met its lofty expectations, or where it was?
Yeah. So we've talked a bit about the world, talked a bit about the spirit thing, and you touched on the first person shooter aspect. It's more of a first person finger shooter aspect, because the protagonist Akito has been possessed by like a supernatural investigator called KK, and you're kind of like dropped into the middle of this rapture. Like, you know, the game starts with Akito getting possessed, and so he's thrown into the middle of this supernatural mystery, which is very intriguing setup and all that. And you begin by sort of investigating the spooky goings on. You know, you learn more about KK. You learn that Akito has a sister in hospital who you don't learn a lot about, but is apparently tied up in all of this stuff. And the game leads you through these sort of like little haunted house sort of set pieces, where like you'll go into like a dark abandoned subway or like a hoarder's house, and they sort of show their hand in terms of their horror pedigree. And they make some really unnerving environments. Like there's this really occult meets high-tech glitch aesthetic, which I find really cool and endearing. And it's just they set up this atmosphere of a very spooky world and a supernatural mystery that is very enticing for the first sort of couple of hours. But then it sort of like opens up into being an open world game. You know, this is set in a neighborhood of Shibuya. You know, they want you to explore. And this is where I kind of realized what the game actually was, and subsequently where it started falling apart for me, is that it's very much an open world game with a lot of open world activities. It's that sort of that classic open world Ubisoft template mold of having a variety of different activities that you can participate in, having them repeat across the map in a variety of ways, and letting you free at certain points between main story missions and just sort of go for your life and sort of just enjoy those things. So you'll have things like the yokai, which you mentioned. There are a few different variants of that that you'll need to sort of capture to sort of gain ability points or what have you. And each one will have a very specific mini game attached to that. So it's like, oh, I'll have to hide while the kappa eats a cucumber, and you know, after a couple of minutes of that, I can go capture him, or I'll chase another yokai down the corners of alleyways and that kind of stuff like that. And then there's also things like collectibles. So the city's absolutely littered with lost spirits, which have sort of been raptured but can't move on quite yet because they're still attached to this world. And I'll say quickly that a lot of that, those lost spirits, there seems to be a bit of like a capitalist theme here. Like they're all like worried about their job and like their finances and school and those kind of like first world problems kind of thing, which I thought was a nice commentary on Japanese society and I guess modern first world society. And so there's a lot of that. There's the Torii gates, which you'll have to essentially find around the city and purge with your spiritual powers, and that will unveil more of the map. There's this sort of killer fog that stops you from going out too far, but once you purge those Torii gates, more of the map will be revealed, and you'll find more more mini games, more icons, more collectibles for you to collect. You can find objects to sell to cats to earn money. All this kind of, I guess, open world busy work that isn't like fantastic. It can be very comforting at times, and I know a lot of people really enjoy these kinds of open world games. They're like podcast games, right? You'll listen to Sifter and then you'll just like roam around the world and sort of do these chores to just keep your hands busy, essentially. But it really, like, where it falls by, it really takes away from what this game does really well, which is like the main story beats, the set pieces, the spooky world, the atmosphere, and I guess to an extent the plot isn't fantastic, but it moves quite briskly and you kind of want to go back to it. And it eventually, the game sort of, it shows its hand in that a lot of the game, despite it being a relatively short game at like 15, 20 hours, is made up of these open world activities. Like the main story missions actually make up a very small part of it. And I kind of just, I guess I just found myself wondering why this was, you know, like there was so much great stuff in this game, but I feel like they had to draw it out a little.
Found when I was playing it, I did enjoy some of those side quests, but in previous games, and in Assassin's Creed's game, for example, all those Ubisoft open world games, I just finished Horizon Forbidden West and I've cleared everything that could possibly be done. But in this game, I just moved to different story missions and kind of just did little side detours to whatever spirit needed to be rescued in an area, whatever side quest happened to be directly between where I was and where I needed to be. And that was quite an enjoyable way to do it, but I really didn't feel compelled to go broader than that. The only thing that kind of pulled me along was I noticed there were, you know, a few little collectibles and they give you a little bit of lore, and some of those things I thought, oh well, I'm nearby, I'll go out of my way to go and get this particular thing. But it's kind of a tricky one because it has a lot of that there, but part of me wanted it to be even smaller than it is, and I'm starting to become more of a fan of smaller games. And even if it was a little bit less open world and you were a bit more funneled in direction through the plot, I'm wondering if a bit more of that might have made a difference.
Yeah, I think this would have been a great 10-hour game. And there are so many instances, so many design choices in this game, which sort of really point to the fact that they had to stretch this shit out. Like, so we'll talk about the combat a bit. You know, Akito has, you know, three elemental like shooty gun powers. So he's got like a wind power, he's got a short range water burst, and he's got like a long range like fire missile. But the thing with this combat, it starts off really, really slow. And I mean that in terms of like, it's actually slow to actually shoot your wind blasts. And it's slow in that it starts off really simple. You start off with wind blast and that's kind of it. You kind of just fire it really slow. It takes a couple of seconds to do that. And, you know, This is because the game wants you to upgrade stuff. This game is an upgrade tree, but you take a look at the upgrade tree and about 80% of that goes into making your powers fire faster, right? So the combat is kind of slow and plodding for a good number of hours, I thought, and it only picks up once you hit the chapter 2, chapter 3 mark, where you start getting your entire suite of abilities that you can juggle, you've upgraded your powers to be firing at a quick enough pace for it to not feel egregious. And that kind of baffles me because they've artificially slowed these mechanics down just to have a upgrade tree, it feels like. And as a result, they've added in a shitload of spirits and all these little tasks in the open world for you to earn currency and experience points to feed into that upgrade tree. And furthermore than that, like, they've done things like the ability to actually absorb those spirits to earn your upgrade points takes a long time as well. It takes about 3-4 seconds to suck up spirits. And on the upgrade tree, there's actually an additional upgrade path for that ability. So you can lessen the time it takes for you to absorb those spirits that feed into the ability tree that makes your combat faster. And it all just feels so needless, so artificial. And I feel like they must have run out of ideas at some point, or they had a much more complexity planned, and it just sort of never got there. I mentioned in my review that by the end of this game, like, I felt like, you know, I was just getting started. I had just the suite of combat had only just got to the point where I started to feel okay, but then, you know, that was it. And I felt like there was so much potential there. If they had sort of truncated that sort of power growth and sort of got you to that point quicker, and maybe had a few more ideas up their sleeves, it could have been a much more engaging game. They've cut out a lot of fluff, but yeah, this game has a lot of fluff, and it feels a lot of it feels needless and not exciting enough for you to veer off the sort of the critical path for you to chase. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, and I also found as a shooter, the control is pretty wonky, and I found that I overcorrected a lot, and quite often I got backed into a corner, and I didn't have a lot of those same abilities that I played in other games to get out of those situations where I'd literally been backed into a corner, and I was just having to mash triangle to heal myself up, and then you get interrupted if you try to pull out cores from enemies so you can damage them to a certain point. You do this big kind of like hand weavy ultimate. Yeah. Takes ages.
It takes a long time.
Looks cool. Gives you a little bit of a health boost. So there's a bit of a motivation to try and do it. But quite often I found like it's easier just to like keep spamming the enemy in order to just get them off the board, because you can get swamped pretty easily as well. So
absolutely. Yeah, you can upgrade all those takedowns too. So by the end of the game, you're doing those a lot quicker, and they're more viable as sort of a strategy. But yeah, it all just feels so needless.
One thing that I think is really interesting and worth mentioning as well, and I'm always curious. We're never always privy to what happens in the background of all these games. But you know, the game was introduced by Ikumi Nakamura at the E3, who was the creative director of a number of the different games, I think Evil Within, and you know, all of these other series as well. But she left partway through the making of this game due to health concerns. And you know, it has been a tricky time to make games. Make games, full stop. It's hard to make games, but it has been particularly tricky over the last couple of years. And I'm just wondering if factors like that have meant that, you know, there is that sort of lack of focus perhaps, or you know, maybe they didn't a whole bunch of factors could have meant that this game wasn't exactly what they were intending it to be, because situation wasn't what they intended it to be when they set out to make this game in 2019.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I do feel like a lot of like this game feels like it has a very strong identity in some respects, you know, with the horror elements, with the Japanese folklore stuff, and then it also feels like it has a lot of I guess I'll say like Western style, like crowd pleasing elements, like open world stuff, collectibles, all that kind of thing. And so I like, obviously I don't know if it feels like there may have been a pivot at some point. There may have been changed direction at some point. Like it certainly feels like that. Cause I feel like there's definitely two games in here, and you can definitely like pull them apart and they would be two quite different experiences. And I think I noticed that Ikumi Nakamura only really gets a special thanks at the end of the credits, which I guess is, you know, increasingly common in this industry. Unfortunately, like, if you leave a project halfway through, you're not obliged to get your hard work recognized in the end credits of the game, final product. yeah, we'll never know. But I look forward to the Noclip documentary that unveils all this in the near future.
Definitely. Can you tell me, was there a moment that really stood out to you where you thought the game was doing the best it could be? It was exactly what they'd intended to do, or a moment that you think about when you were writing your review that go, this is what this game is trying to be?
I'll say that towards the end, like I mentioned this before, but when all the mechanics of the sort of Shinto sorcery combat started coming together, it all started to feel really good. And you actually unlocked the sort of higher tier abilities on the skill tree. So once you'd gotten all the speed upgrades out of the way, you'd get stuff like you can grapple to the top of any building. And that was a very freeing moment for me. I love like traversal in games a bit. Like this game up to that point didn't have a lot of it's not really a movement based game. Like you mentioned before, you get back into a corner, there's no real like dodge or like ability in combat. But it has some very basic parkour, and this once you get the grapple ability to sort of, there are like these Tengu around the world and you can grapple to them, but this ability lets you just do it any way you want. That sort of sort of opened the game up for me. It felt a bit more liberating. It made a lot of the open world tasks that you're asked to do as part of the core story progression in the later game a lot more bearable, I suppose, because I liked the ability to sort of just explore all the detail they'd put into the city, at a quicking pace. I'd say it does come together at the end. You know, it like with many games, it gets good after 10, 13 hours, but that's not something, it's not something I would have stuck with that long if I hadn't been reviewing it. I'll say that. I'm glad I went on the journey to sort of see the sort of technical artistry and the art direction chops that eventually got thrown into this thing.
I think definitely for me as well. I think what this game does really well is that sort of interactive horror experience. When you're walking through these sort of grubby hallways in the backs of buildings and, objects around the world are like flapping up against doors to block you through. Or there's a particular moment where you're moving through a building and all these pictures on the walls are kind of like flashing with that sort of glitch spooky aesthetic you were talking about. Some of that really felt like that's something that's tricky to do in film, but it feels like it's native in a video game, and I think it really nails that. So some of those moments, it's not a scary game. I didn't find it spooky.
Yeah.
I was expecting to be spooked more. Like more jump scare sort of stuff, maybe because of the pedigree of this studio, but I didn't find I was spooked by it. But it was kind of an intriguing kind of. Is that something you felt as well?
Yeah, no, definitely. Like they nailed the really unnerving hallway feeling really well, and I love all those sort of occult effects that happen when you walk down a environment. And I think having played through the entire game, and I think I've finished all the side missions too. There's like two jump scares in total in this game. They got me good, but they don't rely on that stuff because they don't need to. All of that stuff is really, really great. And I guess that stuff happened more consistently.
Who's this game for?
If you like Japan and you just miss Japan, definitely like dive into it for a few hours. I find myself comparing it to the Yakuza games a lot just because it has a very similar structure, as in like semi-open world, you know, side quests, main quests, but it's very different from that game. I feel like this game takes itself very seriously, whereas Yakuza has a comedic side that it sort of observes earnestly, and it, you know, makes it, it's very melodramatic too, where this is very straight down the line. But I'd say, like, if you enjoy the Japanese environment, you enjoy exploring really dense metropolitan areas, and you kind of need an open world comfort game, I would definitely give it a shot. But it's quite hard to recommend because there is a lot that you need to slog through at the beginning. And I'll say that if you play for 6 or 7 hours up to chapter 2, you pretty safely have seen most of what the game has to offer. I hope the game does well because I really like Tango, and I hope there is obviously a lot of skill in this sort of shown in this game. This game's sort of, I guess, construction. And I really hope that they get a chance to sort of do another project with the same kind of budget again. So yes, perhaps give it a shot if it seems to tickle your fancy.
I actually found myself quite enjoying the sort of Saki Cortana that KK is in the background as you're moving through the world. Like,
yeah, you know, I quite like just, that too.
Kind of commenting on like things in the shop, like just being an annoyed friend who you're just kind of dragging around. And he's totally that tropey character of the like old master, and he's taking the, you know, the young apprentice along, and he's kind of getting a bit annoyed with the way. But he does, you know, at moments, you know, sort of give you a bit of praise as well as you're moving through. And I kind of felt that relationship between them was pretty good, actually, like despite the fact that it's like pretty standard fare of, you know, it's the end of the world, your sister's been kidnapped, you've got to go find her for some reason, here you go. Like I quite like that relationship as they sort of talk your way through it.
He's like it's like a grumpy 40-year-old man, you know, and he's really the only character that you actually interact with at any length, because he's always with you. And that sort of generational divide of like Akito being like a Gen Zer and him being like a, I don't know, his geriatric millennial, I suppose, and like sort of their differences, it was really amusing at times, and I did like their banter quite a lot, and that's definitely a highlight as well. I should sort of pay give that its due.
It is the sort of game where I think if you have, you know, increasingly I find myself increasingly moving into this category as I get older, but you know, 15-20 minutes where you just want to walk in a direction, you want to see something cool, you want to do about, you know, a few little tasks, feel like you've done something relatively mindless after a long day of work, I really think that's the sort of game that would appeal to people. And I think as well, even if you take big gaps between playing this game, I think maybe that might be for its credit as well.
Yeah, because,
you know,
I'd say
I think in a compacted space, I think you start to feel the repetitive tasks a bit. And again, same with those Ubisoft open world games. But I'm wondering if, you know, you're jumping in, it's the one maybe game you play for 6 months or something like that. There's a lot of people who play games exactly that way. You know, you might get a lot out of it in that particular regard. And again, I kind of was hoping that there would be. And the photo mode, I think, is probably one other thing I would say, which is kind of a little bit disappointing to me, because it doesn't pause the game when you go into photo mode. And I went to try and snap, some screenshots for the game, and I just got killed because I was just like, well, getting bashed. And it's really funny when it happens the first few times. So, I couldn't get into that. But then, but I think if you just took, if it had a mode where you could just spend the time to explore, or, you know, here's a bit of history about this particular temple that you're visiting, like I reckon that'd be really cool.
Yeah, like an Assassin's Creed Discovery mode kind of DLC for this thing, where you learn the history of there's a tiny bit of that, but yeah, I'm looking forward to what they might be doing post-release for this, because they have the city, it's a great, it's so ripe for so many different kinds of stories that you could tell in it. I hope they get a chance to sort of build on this.
So that is Ghostwire Tokyo. It is out today. If you're listening to this on the day of release, it's on PlayStation 5 and on the PC as well. One of the last PlayStation exclusive, I'd imagine, from a Bethesda published game ever to be made, because they are now firmly owned by Microsoft. So it would be very rare that there'd be a PlayStation exclusive game. Might be an interesting game for you. Tell us what you reckon if you think it's really enjoyable.
Sit down for a chat with your pals in video games. This is Mainstream.
So this has been Mainstream by Sifter. It's what video games the Sifter team have been playing, and our friends who work in the media as well. Ed, thank you so much for joining us on episode 40 of Mainstream.
Thank you so much for having me, Gianni. It's been a blast.
Thanks to Brian Fairbanks from Salty Dog Sounds for composing the Mainstream theme music. And thanks to Omni Shio, our podcast host, for supporting Sifter to produce the three podcasts that we've got. Sifter is produced by Nicholas Kennedy, Kyle Poletto, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Daniel Ang, Adam Christou. Mitch Lowe is our senior producer, and my name is Gianni Giovanni. I'm the executive producer. Now, Ed, if people want to find your work, where can they find you on the internet? Maybe have a read of the review that you've done for Ghostwire Tokyo.
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Edmund Tran, and you can find my work at gameshub.com.
You can find Sifter online as well, sifter.com.au. We're on social media at SifterHQ. And as I mentioned, we've got two other podcasts that we do. Lightmap, where we speak to game developers, creatives. We get a bit of the story of what it actually takes to make things in creative media. Spoiler, it's pretty hard, but it's an interesting story to hear how people put these things together that we love. And we've also got a weekly news recap show called Walkthrough, which comes out every Sunday. So if you haven't been keeping up with the news and you just wanted to get a nice 10 to 15 minute bite-sized recap of everything that's happened, that's where you can go to find out more. That's all for this particular episode of Mainstream. Ed, thanks again for coming on the show.
Cheers.
And until next time, have fun.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.